from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee. It's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
What is up, my friends? Welcome into it. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. No, it is not Todd Starnes today. He is out and about doing his thing. He will be back soon and shortly. We always miss him when he is not behind the microphone and off, but have no fear, my friends. Andy Hoosier sitting in, moving the Liberty University studios out here to my flagship station, Wichita's Big Talker KQAM, as it is a great affiliate of the Todd Starnes Radio Show. And hey, happy pre-Friday. It's a Thursday to you. We are almost to the end of the week. You see the light at the end of the tunnel. And boy, oh boy, I was just telling Dylan, the great producer there in Memphis, I was telling him about there's so much news today that we're going to try and cover on the program that I'm going to have a hard time trying to stay somewhat organized because I'm going to feel scatterbrained with how much is happening. So we'll try and do it in a clear and concise manner to where we can cover as much as we possibly can. And I want to hear your thoughts on all of it today at 901-260-5926, 901-260-5926. It's always such an honor to fill in for Todd when he's out and cannot wait to see him back behind the microphone here soon. But what a wild week it has been for sure. Bottom of this hour, we're going to talk with Don Brown. He's a former Navy JAG and former Pentagon official. He knows the ins and outs of the law on how to go after somebody if they've broken the law. And as we try to clean up corruption in society, the new indictment of James Comey, is that going to go anywhere? The 8647 picture of the seashells on the seashore. Dylan, that's very hard to say, especially on radio. I took a risk on that one, but we did it. Are we actually going to see anything come from that one? And will we see James Comey behind bars in any fashion, making a threat to the United States and to the president of the United States? So we'll talk with Don about that. And that's kind of where I want to focus this hour of the program, and I want to get your thoughts on it at 901-260-5926, not only about James Comey, but about all the corruption that we're starting to see. And can we just say hats off to the man himself, the new attorney general, the acting attorney general, at least Todd Blanch, right now with not only the indictment of James Comey within, what, a week or two of his new acting AG position with the leaving of the former attorney general, the indictment of James Comey, the raids of the Leering Centers in Minnesota. See what I did there? See what I did there? Yeah, the Leering Centers of the Minnesota in Minneapolis, where we saw those federal raids just a few days ago. The announcement of the Southern Poverty Law Center and that announcement coming public about their investments into the radicalized groups that they supposedly fight. But if you don't have anything to fight, then you have to keep the false rage going so that way you can continue to be relevant. Kind of like every social program out there. If you don't have homelessness anymore, then why would we have to spend millions of dollars on homelessness and all the organizations that actually help fight that issue? So, of course, the government programs, we spend millions upon millions of your taxpayer money, and we don't do anything to solve the issue, because if the issue was solved, we wouldn't need those programs, and those people would be out of jobs, and they wouldn't be very happy about that. So it's the ongoing vicious cycle and the hamster wheel that we always have to deal with. But hat tip, at least in my opinion, to Todd Blanch. Now, I will say probably the majority of these investigations were already underway under our former attorney general, and now we're finally starting to see it come to light. We've been very critical, I think, at least in my opinion. She was at least one of the weak links in the Trump administration and at one of those cabinet positions where we didn't see a whole lot come out from her. And what we did see come out was kind of ill-timed and poorly done, unfortunately, to where that's why she's not in that position any longer. Todd Blanch has come out within the first couple of weeks. We've seen a lot of changes in actual action on holding people accountable for their corruption going on in society. So I got to give Todd Blanch a hat tip on that. It may not all have been him. It may have been from the previous individuals in there that have been working to this point, and it just kind of fell into place. But the fact that we finally took that leap and we did it, we're indicting James Comey, we're exposing the Southern Poverty Law Center, is all really good news. But I want to take it a step further, because I want to ask you the question, and it's really a concern. If this is true, it's a really concerning problem for me of the dehumanization of individuals and in society in general, based on social media, based on the rhetoric that you hear. And if you're on social media, I do not envy you at all. I see it. I post quite a bit on my social media. Todd posts on his social media all the time. And you can see exactly the really ridiculous, angry rhetoric that comes out of there. The dehumanization of people where they don't think twice about calling you a non-human. And it's unfortunate. And is that what we're starting to see? Because Democrats love to do that. And then when they get called out on it, they play the victim like James Comey. Now, I don't know if you saw his video posted online. It's very awkward because I don't know if he's just really tall and he just has a hard time positioning a camera or if he's not used to selfies, whatever. But it looks really awkward. And then he comes out and tries to play the victim for having this indictment.
Well, they're back. This time about a picture of seashells on a North Carolina beach a year ago. And this won't be the end of it. But nothing has changed with me. I'm still innocent. I'm still not afraid. And I still believe in the independent federal judiciary. So let's go.
Let's go.
But it's really important that all of us remember this is not who we are as a country. This is not how the Department of Justice is supposed to be. And the good news is we get closer every day to restoring those values. Keep the faith.
I look, keep the faith. I'm such a victim of society. I'm being persecuted. They're coming after me. This is the retaliation tour of the Trump administration coming after the enemies, political enemies of Donald Trump. That's what they've always tried to claim. That's what they claim when Donald Trump first got into office. If you remember, it was a scare tactic across the board that, well, even the media said it. Donald Trump was going to round up members of the media, all of his political opposition. No, ironically, that's the narcissism that comes out because that's what they exactly tried to do to Donald Trump for his 4 years not in office, throwing him in prison, trying to ruin his businesses, trying to, you know, remove him from the ballot in numerous different states. So, you know, if you want to use the term of the chickens coming home to roost, yeah, you know, hey, there's a little bit of an argument to be made there. But James Comey, the guy who had his texts exposed at talking to Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, saying that he was going to do everything in his power as FBI director at that time to prevent Donald Trump from being president of the United States before Trump admin number one. The guy that accepted the documents that was the Russiagate that we now know with full certainty was a complete falsehood and a scam by the Clinton campaign to turn over this quote-unquote dossier that Donald Trump was colluding with Russia to try and rig the election in 2015. We all know that that's a scam now, and that guy was part of it. So he had a bad rep in a history before that, and now we see him out there with this 8647. Now, whether that's going to get him in enough trouble to be deemed as a quote-unquote threat to the United States, I don't really know. But it leads to what we just saw this past weekend, obviously, and I know Todd's been talking about it with this assassination attempt on Donald Trump at the correspondents' dinner on Saturday, that there have been two responses from progressives, and neither one of those response options have been, oh my gosh, maybe we should tone down the rhetoric, maybe we shouldn't try to kill a human being, and maybe we should do something a little bit different than actually just claiming that Donald Trump's a violator of human rights, and he's violating the Constitution, that he's a rapist and a pedophile and everything else. That's not one of the options that they've come to in their conclusion on this. They've come to the conclusion of either, oh darn, another attempt that missed and was not successful, or it didn't happen at all in the first place and it was all staged. Those are the two conclusions that progressives have come to. And because of that response, I ask you the question, have we gotten to such a divide in society?
Right now, our Jewish friends feel forgotten. There's a Jewish woman named Esther I'd like to tell you about. In her home in Israel, Esther is living through days and nights of fear, sirens sounding, rockets screaming through the sky, long stretches spent in a bomb shelter. 84 years old, Esther is elderly, fragile, and alone. Imagine that. No help, no food deliveries, no medical care, no one knocking at the door, in a war zone. But because of friends like you, Esther is not alone. Through the fellowship, you are there, bringing food, meeting urgent needs, and reminding Jewish people like Esther, you are not forgotten. In times of fear and uncertainty, your compassion brings hope and help. Esther asked that you hear these words. To those who give, you are doing a very great mitzvah, a good deed. You give from your hearts. May God protect you. Friends, your gift to God's people is truly hope-giving and life-saving. Please don't wait. Call 888-799-IFCJ right now. That's 888-799-IFCJ, or go to ifcj.org. That's ifcj.org.
That we can't even recognize when rhetoric has gotten so far that it's led to the potential harm of human beings. Like, is that where we're at in society, to where we're so divided and we passionately and vehemently hate someone so badly that we even put the blinders on, and when there is an attempt on harming someone, we don't even look at it as, wow, maybe we should reevaluate something, but yeah, it just didn't happen. Or, By golly, I wish they would have succeeded. Because if that is the case, we're in a world of hurt of society. 901-260-5926. That's a little concerning to me. Now, that being said, are we seeing a change in the tide for the Justice Department in general, Department of Justice, because of the exposing of what we're seeing? And will we start putting a clamp down on this? And that doesn't mean the restriction of freedom of speech, but that does mean that if you do actually become a serious threat to a human being, Republican or Democrat, right or left, regardless of who you are, although the predominantly side is coming from them, obviously, that if you do become a serious threat, are we actually going to take the action to do what we can to stop you from actually harming an individual, and especially an elected official, and especially the president of the United States? Because it sounds like we might actually start taking that action. I don't know where you fall on the debate with social media influencers and podcasters. I try to stay away from that as much as possible. But just in the past day or so, Erica Kirk with Turning Point USA did make an interesting comment about this exact issue, about the dehumanizing of society.
Headline lying about me. I have comedians dressing up in whiteface. I have people saying I'm not fit to be CEO. And I have Candace Owens claiming I murdered my husband. And the list goes on and on and on. There is a serious epidemic of dehumanization plaguing this country. The most unthinkable tragedies have now become commonplace in our daily headlines, and yet the media finds a way to conveniently explain away violence. This is what we're up against. This is what we're up against.
All right. So is that true? Do you agree with that mindset? Now, again, whether you believe Erica Kirk or whether you're more on the Candace Owens side of things, I don't want to get into that debate particularly, but that comment itself resonates very true. I actually had this weekend, when we were covering the correspondence dinner assassination attempt, I had a lot of comments on social media that I'd seen on my page. I've seen on Todd's page as well, about people that, of course, say that words don't lead people to violence, which is probably one of the silliest and dumbest things I've ever heard in my entire life, because that's exactly how you get someone into a state of wanting to harm, which is the words that you do to brainwash them into thinking that that's legitimate and okay and justified in some fashion. And I want to go to a prime example of this, and I guess he's kind of on our side. I used to be kind of a big fan, although I don't necessarily like his style on the radio, but Alex Jones with InfoWars, if you remember, had to backtrack a little bit after the Pizzagate issue, where he had made the claim that there was a pizza restaurant in New York somewhere that was the place for high elite individuals to call and order children for a human trafficking ring, and it led to someone trying to bomb the pizzeria, and he had to retract a lot of that. Now, unfortunately, a lot of that's actually come true. So Alex Jones has always been one, at least in my opinion, to where, you know, what he says it in the most off-putting way to not have people believe him. But at the end of the day, a lot of the claims that he makes actually comes true to some degree. His approach to it, though, to the general public is just a little bit more abrasive than I think most people usually like to take in the mainstream. But nonetheless, that's a prime example of how certain words and leaders can lead to political violence. And now we have an entire Democrat Party, not just a few individuals, but not just a select few, but an entire party where they said Donald Trump is a Nazi and a fascist and an authoritarian and going to round up the media and going to throw people in Guantanamo Bay and execute his political enemies and use the military for his personal gain and do whatever he wants to do and how he's a pedophile and all down the line. And you, of course, now they're like, no, there's no way that was going to lead to someone actually harming President Donald Trump. James Comey, with the indictment, with all the anti-Trump rhetoric that he had done as an official, as the head of the FBI, now all of a sudden, no, I've never wanted to harm Donald Trump in any fashion, never wanted to make a threat against him whatsoever, and now tries to play the victim. You throw the log into the lake, and then you play the victim when you see the ripples start happening. I find it kind of interesting. It's a sad world that we're in today, and I don't know where we go from here and how we get back to actually humanizing people again and seeing everyone that we can disagree politically, we can disagree ideologically, but we don't have to hate someone on a human level. Got to take a break. 901-260-5926. Your thoughts on some of this? Is that where we're at in society? And if so, how do we get it back? We'll talk about that when we come back around the corner. It is the Todd Starnes radio program for a Thursday. Stay here. Welcome back to it. Todd Starnes radio program. Andy Hoosier sitting in today. Great to have you along for the ride for a pre-Friday celebration. 901-260-5926. I was trying to think during the break, any opportunity, any option to where, from the conservative side, individuals who think a little bit more logically, less emotionally unstable in some fashion, and we think through issues, and even if we vehemently despise someone, whether it's the ongoing battle about who's a deep stater and who tried to assassinate Charlie Kirk with Erica Kirk and Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson, or whether it's someone like Barack Obama and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, or whether it's someone like Donald Trump from the other side of the aisle, is there anyone that you would honestly advocate to have harmed? And I would say a resounding no. We disagree with them vehemently. And in fact, Democrats, not only it's not about Donald Trump, but if you remember just a year or so ago, they killed the United Healthcare CEO. Because, well, he wasn't providing universal health care, and because he was turning down to different insurance claims within the company, and how evil the insurance companies are, that I find, by the way, quite ironic, and Dylan, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, they're the ones advocating for the expansion of Obamacare, which is putting more subsidized taxpayer money into the healthcare system for insurance companies, while they're mad at the insurance companies for the bad coverage that they provide. Dylan, does that make any sense to anyone? I don't know that it does.
No, not much.
Yeah, not much on that one. That's a little weird. But here's the thing. I know most of us, you and I probably all agree, that there are a few, and I want to say this in very blanket terms, organizations or industries, for example, the big pharma industry, the big insurance industry, the big herbicide pesticide industry, the deep state, the bureaucratic state, whatever, that we despise. But no one would advocate for their harming. I would like to see and love to see the irony, which is what we're starting to see right now, is the tide may be turning on justice with the Department of Justice under Todd Blanche, is that we're now starting to see the legal system turn on the ones that used to use it for protection. They're now starting to face this legal system after abusing the system, never let a crisis go to waste, and use it for their own personal advantage. And to me, at least, that's sweet irony. I really enjoy that, because you've tried to say it's. I always relate it to as an example of a child, where the kid that always has to win, always has to get their way, they're never told no from their parents, they're playing the board game with their friends, and they're playing the game, and as they start to lose, they change the rules of the game in the middle of the game because they don't want to lose. And then when they continue to lose, they get angry, they overturn the board and all the pieces on the board game, they put up the board game, and they say, I'm going home because I don't want to play any longer. That has been the Democrats and the progressive movement and the deep state from both sides, I guess, a little bit. For a very long time, they put regulation after regulation, rule after rule. In fact, there have been court cases now and changes in policy to where if there's a challenge on institutional regulation, let's say Environmental Protection Agency. In fact, Lee Zeldin, the EPA head, was doing a committee hearing earlier this week and was asked about that, on why the EPA is not fighting climate change around the world. And he mentioned openly, where in our regulations are lost, does it say we have to battle climate change and man-made global warming? That's not what we're here for. We're deregulating. We're focusing on the private sector. And he made the case that there are new lawsuits now that openly say we're not supposed to just take the interpretation of the bureaucratic agencies themselves, but the courts actually have to make their own opinion when the private sector is challenging the interpretation of one of these laws. And I find that really good news across the board. So in all the clutter and the madness that we hear in the world right now, the dehumanization, the ongoing conflict in Iran, which, by the way, we have some updates and we'll get to in just a little bit here, with the work that Congress is doing, which they've been doing a lot. Last night was a big night for FISA and for Farm Bill, so we'll discuss all that throughout the program today as well. But through all of the clutter, at least to me, some of the big news, and an administration that's been the most productive administration in modern American history under Donald Trump, the 300 to 400 executive orders, all the different mandates, all the different investments, all the different regulation cuts and tax cuts, and the one big beautiful bill that we've done in a single year alone, that we need to remember going into midterm season, we are winning, we are doing the right thing, and we may be slowly moving in the right direction, but at least we're moving there better than what we would be if these individuals in Congress and as the president were not in office. So the Justice Department, one of those big wins. Todd Blanche, God bless you, my friend. We're moving in that right direction. Got to take a break. Don Brown right around the corner. We'll talk some more about this. Andy Hoosier sitting in for the great Todd Starnes on the Todd Starnes radio program.
Here's something most people don't know. When Warren Buffett was just 13 years old, he didn't put his money into a savings account. While other kids were earning next to nothing at local banks, Buffett put $114 into a little-known investment. Today, that $114 would be worth over $15 million. And it wasn't a risky trade, it wasn't even insider knowledge. It was an account that's been around since 1888, and over the last 25 years, it's averaged 29% a year. That's what happens when your money is allowed to compound. Compare that to today's savings accounts, paying less than 0.5%. While inflation quietly eats away at your buying power. Buffett understood early, banks are great businesses, just not for savers. If you'd like to see what some investors call the 29% account, go now to secretaccount29.com. That's secretaccount, the numbers, 29.com. Secretaccount29.com.
Welcome back to it. Todd Starnes Radio Program. Andy Hoosier sitting in today, moving that Liberty University studio out here to Wichita, Kansas, where I'm based out of, my flagship station. You can find Todd on his website, toddstarnes.com. You can find my website on my website at HoosierReason.com, HOOSERReason.com. It's always great to fill in for Todd. Headlines today, debt topping 100% of the GDP. And of course, now the bias reporting from the so-called Drudge Report that used to be conservative, not so conservative any longer, has a picture of Donald Trump on there. Now, I didn't realize that Donald Trump was all of a sudden the one increasing massive amounts of debt when this has been going on for, well, a really, really long time. But, of course, you know, it takes a while to re-steer that ship, and even though we do need to hit the panic button on, I always try to equate the economy as like Wile E. Coyote from the cartoon. When you're off the cliff and your body starts falling and then your head and your arms are there with the sign that says help, the body's already falling. There's like, it's already done. We're already almost near extinction for the economic crash that we're going to see with the almost $40 trillion in debt, which is insane. But here we are. And does government think that they're going to cut spending anytime soon, at least to the amount that we need? No, probably not, especially when 80% of the budget is social programs that we're not allowed to touch. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but I want to move it to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker Hotline. As you know, we've been following the change in the Department of Justice. Is the tide turning, and are people starting to be held accountable to some degree for the actions of threatening the president, political violence, corruption going on in society? James Comey making his video yesterday, playing the victim for what he's having to go through now.
Well, they're back. This time about a picture of seashells on a North Carolina beach a year ago. And this won't be the end of it. But nothing has changed with me. I'm still innocent. I'm still not afraid. And I still believe in the independent federal judiciary. So let's go.
So let's go. That's him. I'm going to fight this. I'm a victim of society. Is that where we are? That's where we move to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker Hotline. Happy to have on the Todd Starnes Radio Program today. He's a former Navy JAG officer, Judge Advocate General, also former Pentagon veteran, constitutional attorney, best-selling author, and so much more. Happy to have on here Mr. Don Brown. Don, how are you, my friend?
Andy, I'm doing great. It's good to be with you today. I'm a good friend of Todd. Looking forward to chatting with you as well.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to have you here and chat with us here on the program. This is such a wild time, and first off, I'm glad to see our new Attorney General, Todd Blanche, actually do some action. In the past week or so since he's taken that office, we've now seen the indictment of James Comey. We've seen the exposing of the Southern Poverty Law Center. We've seen the raiding of the Learing Centers in Minnesota. But for just a moment, let's go to James Comey with this indictment, the picture of the 8647 on the seashells by the seashore. Is that going to go anywhere, or is this just an open opportunity to try and bring him back into the courts and then get him on something else? What's your take on this whole thing?
Well, I heard you play a clip of him in a moment ago, and I'm just thinking the poor baby. After all of the political prosecutions that he pushed himself, he lied to Congress, he obstructed Congress, and he basically skated when the former AG, Pam Bondi, just dropped the ball and let those prosecutions slip. That's another story. But as Todd Blanche has said, you know, it was a federal grand jury in the Eastern District of North Carolina that considered the case and decided there was enough there to bring an indictment for threatening the president. So they've indicted them for threatening the president and for, you know, transmission of that threat into interstate commerce. And so we'll see what happens. There's a Republican judge on the bench, Louise Flanagan, a George W. Bush appointee, UVA grad, The issue here is whether or not she's going to toss it or let it go to the jury. If she lets it go to the jury, anything can happen. But yeah. We're going to have to see what happens early on in this case, and he wanted to keep an eye on. I'm glad to see Tom Blanch moving on these. I'm especially happy to see this prosecution of the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is an oxymoron in and of itself, but the things are looking in the right direction.
Things are looking in the right direction. It's really nice. Now, they're trying to make the claim that the term 86ing doesn't mean to kill, but just means to remove or to get rid of and throw off to the side kind of thing. Based on, if we're just looking at it, and obviously, like you said, he's got a long history here, but just based on the picture itself of the 8647, is that enough to declare that you've made a threat against the President of the United States?
It's going to be up to the judge. It is subjective. The prosecution is going to have to show that subjectively Comey intended that to be the case. You mentioned a moment ago, are they going to add other charges? Unfortunately, the charges in the Eastern District of Virginia probably are not capable of being brought. You can't bring those in North Carolina anyway. But, you know, he says the thing that really strikes me, he claims that he did not arrange, you know, that particular group of shells into that formation. I'm not sure that I believe him on that. I mean, would it just happen? And if you show that he lied in responding to questions or made a false material statement, they could possibly add that charge on as well, which might have a little bit more meat. That has not happened yet. But, you know, in some circles, 86 means more than just to cast aside. So it depends on, you know, what the judge believes. And there's going to be a lot of briefings, both from the government and the defense in this case. They're going to be fighting First Amendment, that it's subjective, it didn't mean that. And of course, the U.S. Attorney's Office is going to be briefing to the contrary. So we'll see how it breaks out. If this case survives the initial motion to dismiss, you know, anything can happen, because this case will be brought in the Eastern District of North Carolina in New Bern, which is a conservative county and it's a conservative area, a red area. We'll see what happens if it goes to a jury.
It will be interesting to see how this plays out, for sure. I'm curious to see where they interpret the 86. And like you said, he's lied many times before. That is very strange. You're just walking along the beach, having a great vacation. All of a sudden, well, look at that, 8647. Have no idea where that came from. I do find that interesting. Don, are you seeing and do you sense the frustration from a lot of American voters? One of the big issues when Trump came into office a year ago was to be a bit more organized, but really hit the reset button on the corruption in Washington, D.C., and try and fight the deep state. And obviously, you working as a former Pentagon official, working with the military, working with different cases, you've seen kind of the inside of how this works. The difficulty to actually expose a lot of this, and the release of the Epstein files that was a botch under Pam Bondi, this here with a lot of this corruption, the Russiagate, and the text messages from James Comey, and all these other issues that we're finally now starting to see an exposing of. Talk about the difficulty of actually dealing with some of these cases, and do you see a lot of the frustration around the country of people mad that we're just not seeing people behind bars where we feel they should be?
Absolutely. I think there has been a mountain of frustration, Andy. I had a book released through Post Hill Press just before the presidential election called Kangaroo Court, and was looking not only at the political prosecutions against President Trump. There were four, as you remember, in Florida, Georgia, D.C., and New York, but looking at other political prosecutions and political prosecutions against ordinary Americans. You know, take, for example, Douglas Mackey, the cartoonist in Florida, who in 2016 drew a cartoon about Hillary Clinton voters and was prosecuted in 2021 under the Biden DOJ for election interference. How ridiculous is that? There would be the McCloskeys, you remember, in St. Louis, the couple that simply stood in their yard, and he's holding an AR and she's waving a revolver around that wasn't even fireable. And the Soros prosecutor, Kimberly Gardner, went after them both initially on felony charges for exercising Second Amendment rights. The frustration has been boiling over. And I think this was Pam Bondi's downfall. She just moved too slowly. Here has Todd Blanch has been in less than a month already, and we've seen major movement. You know, with these two cases that we've discussed briefly, and it appears that the investigation is coming to a climax on Clapper and Brennan, especially, and others. So we're going to see what happens. But yes, it has been extremely frustrating, and people have, you know, you can't have a dual system of justice. And if you do not prosecute these prosecutors, I've been saying there ought to be rogue prosecutor laws. These prosecutions brought by these Democrats primarily for political means are an assault on the Constitution. You know, if you ask me, Jack Smith, Letitia James, Alvin Bragg, they all ought to be prosecuted for deprivation and conspiracy to deprive of rights. And I think we're seeing, again, the tide coming in the right direction. Hopefully there's going to be enough time between now and the end of the Trump administration for some of these cases to germinate and to go to full fruit and to get some convictions.
Yeah, it's a work in progress for sure. We're talking with Don Brown. He's a former U.S. Navy JAG, also a former Pentagon veteran, best-selling author, and more. The latest indictment as well from the health side was some of the members under Dr. Anthony Fauci, a.k.a. science himself. Are you optimistic that maybe we could see some more answers come out from the COVID pandemic and what happened under Anthony Fauci with them suppressing freedom of thought and suppressing information coming out and some of the mandates that they were doing? Are we going to see any justice on that front, do you think?
Well, I sure hope so. You know, Anthony Fauci is the beneficiary of one of these auto pen pardons. but in my book, he's not really been pardoned. The question is whether the Justice Department is going to challenge that. But COVID was an absolute assault on the American people. Information was hidden. I read Bobby Kennedy's book a couple of years ago, two or three years ago, called The Real Anthony Fauci. It is eye-opening. You know, Fauci brought this medicine in from Africa and called remdesivir. And if you got COVID during those years, they would put you in the hospital and hit you with remdesivir first. Well, Andy, you may remember this, but remdesivir was an experimental drug in Africa being used on Ebola and AIDS patients.
Yep.
It was pulled off the market in Africa because of a 60% mortality rate, leading to major organ failure, often kidney failure. I had two friends who were treated with that stuff, and they died almost, instantly. And so there has to be prosecutions with regard to the whole COVID scam. They went after ivermectin, which, of course, is a recipient. The inventor is a recipient of the Nobel Prize for medicine. It is cheap, and basically were a lower death rate in third world countries using that other than the expensive jab. And that whole thing needs to be busted up. I really, when I was running for the Senate, and then, we finished second out of seven, so I guess we did okay. We didn't quite win. But when I brought up the issue of medical freedom and what was happening during COVID, I'm telling you, that was one of the topics that people would just explode about. There's still frustration about it, and I hope Todd Blanche will pursue a criminal investigation and prosecution in regard to the actors who brought so much harm upon the American people because of this scam, especially with the jabs.
I think a lot of people want to see a lot of justice on that one. And you're right. When people got on remdesivir in the hospital, it was pretty much the death sentence to finish you off. And not a whole lot of people came off of remdesivir and actually was doing okay. That was a really bad moment in history for sure. You mentioned the Southern Poverty Law Center. Let's go there for just a moment. Obviously, we know there's a lot of corruption. The NGOs, in my opinion, I don't know why we have non-governmental organizations in this nation doing the bidding of government with government funding, but doing it because government's not allowed to do it. I find that kind of weird. Southern Poverty Law Center fighting radicalism in the nation and then being exposed for funding radicalism because, well, we don't want radicalism to go away or else we'd have nothing left to fight and therefore we'd become irrelevant. Is this a normal practice, do you think, in government? And are we just scratching the surface on the corruption here?
Well, you touched on a comment that Elon Musk basically made back in the beginning days, of Doge, that these NGOs are formed for altruistic purposes, at least on the surface, but they wind up getting government money, they wind up, getting contributions and then spending the money to push leftist causes. The Southern Poverty Law Center is a prime example of that. First of all, as I mentioned earlier, it's an oxymoron to call it Southern Poverty Law Center because it sits on, an endowment of over $100 million. And I was taking a look at the indictment showing that in a 10-year period from 2014 2023, it was funneling at least $3 million to these violent organizations such as the Ku Klux Klan, the Aryan Nation, and the North American Socialist League, and our party, I should say, and fomenting racial division. In other words, there was one alleged allegation of $270,000 given to an insider who helped to actually plan the Charlottesville protest under which they claim was a bunch of racists. So they were fueling racism, it appears, with their money so they would have, an excuse to raise more money. They were representing to the people that they're raising money and it's tax deductible and we're going to fight the Ku Klux Klan, we're going to end the Klan, we're going to end the Aryan Nation, when in fact they were fueling money, apparently, under the indictment of those organizations so they could race bait. This whole race baiting thing has been going on for a while. Jesse Jackson was guilty of it. Al Sharpton took to another level. You've got to create the notion that there's racial violence and they raise money. And the Southern Poverty Law Center has been in the middle of that. And the Attorney General and Cash Patel are saying this is just the tip of the iceberg. I believe we're going to see individual indictments. Right now, only this SPLC has been indicted as an organization, but individual indictments are likely to follow. And I think that is also long overdue. And I applaud the Justice Department for finally stepping up to one of these big NGOs. And I hope others are going to be in the targeting force over with.
Yeah, it is wild to watch this all play out. And ironically, a lot of the money, especially the $3 million that we've seen exposed going to these organizations, happening when? Exactly when Donald Trump's been running for office back in 2014 all the way up to 2023. So at the same time that they're the same ones that said that hate crimes have been on the rise, that racism's been on the rise, white supremacy's been on the rise, and obviously it's because Donald Trump encouraged these individuals to come out of the woodworks and actually be out there, was the same time they were getting millions of dollars from this organization, which is kind of ironic. Last question for you, and I appreciate your time, Don, here on the Todd Stearns radio program. Between this and then, of course, the Medicaid scams, the Medicare scams that we're seeing with the Transparency Task Force, with J.D. Vance, Dr. Oz, shutting down hospice centers, the Leering centers that we're investigating now, how much money do you think, theoretically, that we could be saving when we cut out some of this fraudulent spending? And was it institutionalized from the get-go, do you think?
Well, the second part of the question, yes, I believe institutionalized from the get-go. You mentioned earlier in your monologue before you brought me on about a national debt now knocking on the door of $40 trillion. And if you eliminate the welfare state, and frankly, a lot of the welfare state is driven through these NGO scams, maybe we can at least reverse the trend and start attacking that debt. If we lose the dollar and the national debt explosion threatens the dollar, we have lost. And we're going to become poor economically. President Trump himself has said that losing the dollar will be the equivalent of losing the world war. And these NGOs, the graft that is spent on them, the waste that we're seeing, as we're going to see through the Southern Poverty Law Center prosecution and hopefully others. I'm not a big fan of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Why are they into, why are they into vaccines? Why are they into population control? All these need to be busted up, and the money needs to be returned to the Treasury of the United States to try to do some of this debt. Yes, I think that's a big reason we're in trouble, because we're throwing so much money into these scams.
Yeah. Well, and the biggest way to fight it is actually be aware of it and getting that knowledge, which we are. The exposing and the disclosure on many different fronts is happening right before our eyes. Don Brown, we appreciate it very much, my friend. Thanks for coming on the Todd Stearns Show. Let's do it again soon.
Thank you, Andy. It's been an honor. Talk to you soon.
Hey, you bet. We'll do it again soon. Got to take a break. Your phone calls on this and more when we come back here on the Todd Stearns radio program.
Here's something most people don't know. When Warren Buffett was just 13 years old, he didn't put his money into a savings account. While other kids were earning next to nothing at local banks, Buffett put $114 into a little-known investment. Today, that $114 would be worth over $15 million. And it wasn't a risky trade. It wasn't even insider knowledge. It was an account that's been around since 1888. And over the last 25 years, it's averaged 29% a year. That's what happens when your money is allowed to compound. Compare that to today's savings accounts, paying less than 0.5%, while inflation quietly eats away at your buying power. Buffett understood early, banks are great businesses, just not for savers. If you'd like to see what some investors call the 29% account, go now to secretaccount29.com. That's secretaccount, the numbers, 29.com. Secretaccount29.com.
All right, welcome back to it. Todd Stearns radio program. Man, this first one flying right on by. Thanks again to Don Brown on the program. Interesting perspective on this one. I'm curious to see where this legal suit is going to play out for the indictment on James Comey, the victimhood that he says that he's under. I'm going to fight the system. I trust the legal. Of course he trusts the legal system. You know why? Because the legal system usually, predominantly, historically, does very well protecting progressives. Now, it depends on what court system this goes into, right? Because if there are the more progressive court systems that this goes, they could throw it out very easily. But at the same time, it's about knowing, and you know now what's going on. You know now the games that they play, and hopefully we can start using that to fight when they try to play the same game moving forward, which is what's happening quite a bit across the board right now, and all the faux rage about political violence while they continue to say, I mean, we had Hakeem Jeffries literally on TV over this past weekend, before the assassination attempt last weekend, that said that Donald Trump was the dumbest man to ever sit in the Oval Office. When, I mean, that's factually incorrect, because he's actually the guy with the highest IQ that's ever been tested to be president of the United States. But they don't care about that. He's the dumbest guy to ever sit in the White House, and they continue to fight. Which, when we come back in the next hour, we're going to talk about that anger as they continue to fight, because they are losing ground, and I smell their desperation. We'll cover some of that. Andy Hoosier sitting in for Todd Starnes on a pre-Friday celebration. We got lots more to get to for the Todd Starnes radio program. We'll be back.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah. What is up, my friends? Welcome into it. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. It is not Todd Starnes, however. He is back at it soon before you know it, so we will look forward to him getting back behind the microphone. We always miss him dearly when he is out, but it is such a great honor to sit in for him whenever we get a chance to do so. My name is Andy Hoosier, and I will be sitting in for the Todd Starnes radio program today, all day long, for your pre-Friday celebration, moving that Liberty University studios from Memphis, Tennessee, out here to Wichita, Kansas, KQAM, the Big Talker, my flagship station, and a great affiliate of the Todd Starnes radio program. There is a lot going on for a Thursday today. Congress is working hard on things. We'll break down what those things may or may not be here in just a moment. They had a late night. I saw some video from different elected officials doing some live feeds and video recordings on their social media at about 11 o'clock midnight last night. They were still moving through the chamber, voting on issues from the FISA reauthorization, because that deadline was at midnight last night for both chambers to come up with their FISA reauthorization. They had some different versions. The House had passed one yesterday. The Senate was working on theirs. We'll see what that actual final detail looked like. Also, a farm bill that caused some ruckus and some big wins. I would say at least some big wins that happened on that front. So we'll get to that. We have some election updates as well across the nation. Apparently, some Democrats dropping out of races in different states and maybe gaining some momentum in others. And maybe not places that you would normally think. So we'll break that all down for you in just a moment. I want to hear from you. 901-260-5926. 901-260-5926. If you want to chat with us here on the Todd Starnes radio program. Bottom of this hour, we have Reagan Wilbanks. He is the executive administrator for prayer at the Heart organization. We're going to talk about Gen Zers, the young generation, and the mental health issues, the flood of anxiety, and those that are struggling with issues for numerous different reasons. Why is that, and what can we do to fix it? We'll do that with Prayer at the Heart with Reagan Wilbanks coming up in just a little bit. Some big wins, though, the past few days. And when I talk about big wins, I mean, as Donald Trump would say, bigly. We saw some major wins coming out of the Supreme Court, and it has led to a snowball effect this last week. Now, it's good news, because I always like a happy ending to a story. We'll see what the happy ending looks like, and I'm assuming it's going to be a happy ending. But last week was a bit of a rough one. If you remember, the vote on the Virginia redistricting, where Virginians ended up voting to want to do their redistricting, going from one of the most fair congressional makeups in the nation, with a 6-5 makeup, 6 Democrats, 5 Republicans, to now redistrict and say, hey, Texas, you want to do yours? Here's ours. And they ended up redrawing it to now be a 10-1. That obviously being challenged in court. And one judge has already said, yeah, that's not quite right. I don't know how you can say that with 40% of the population of Virginia being registered Republicans, how all of a sudden you're going to only have representation in one congressional district out of 11. That's kind of weird. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But they were really excited about that one. The big news yesterday was the U.S. Supreme Court ended up shooting down what they called racial gerrymandering in the state of Louisiana, where it was predominantly an only black district. Now, according to the Democrats, they say that is a complete violation of the 1965 Civil Rights Act. And I don't understand that one, because I was reading through the 1965 Civil Rights Act, and I don't see anything in there where it says that in order for you to have a right to vote and a right to be represented in the nation, that you have to do it specifically based on race, and you have to have congressional lines that are drawn only based on racial preferences. In fact, I don't see that being written anywhere, inside or outside, the Voting Rights Act of 1965 that was signed by President Lyndon B. Johnson, who, by the way, was the guy that said he would have the minority communities voting Democrats for generations because of how racist that individual was. So that's kind of ironic, but I don't see anywhere where you have to base congressional lines based on race. We got to go back to the fundamentals in this country of what a congressional line and what the congressional districts are supposed to be doing. Obviously, in Congress, there are two chambers of Congress, right? Three branches of government, two chambers of Congress. You got the upper chamber, which is the Senate. Every state has two senators. Then you have, based on population, the lower chamber that's a better representation of the people in the House of Representatives. And that's supposed to be not based on skin color, not based on race, not based on ideology, but based on population size and based on the needs of that population. And for a long time, there's been a lot of gerrymandering from both sides of the aisle. We got to be fair here. But for the most part, we try to find ways to represent the population and their needs at that time. And while there may be slight preference need differences between racial groups, at the end of the day, it's really more about the style of living. Dylan, jump on here for just a moment and see if this makes sense. Is there a difference or is there a better representation because your skin color is different? Or because of a difference in, let's say, living in a city compared to living in rural communities? Which one's a better representation if you try to draw a congressional line, in your opinion?
Probably not the skin color one.
Yeah. Not the skin color one. It would be better to have a better representation of based on living conditions, right? Based on city needs. Based on rural community needs, small towns, and obviously small towns have a lot of different needs between farming communities and agricultural communities, between the rural health care, which it's hard to have hospitals in some of these areas. Those are vastly different needs than, let's say, a city with the inner cities, especially, or somewhere else where we have a lot more social programs and a lot more of the health care needs and emergency responder services. Vastly different demographics there, right? That's not necessarily based on skin color. That's based on actual needs. That's where the congressional lines are supposed to be drawn. And there's a lot of gerrymandering there, which is why California has such bad drawn lines right now. The state of Illinois has such bad drawn lines right now. Most of the East Coast barely has any Republican representation whatsoever, especially in that northeast corner of the state. And we're starting to get it all out. When Texas started this movement, because of Donald Trump saying we should probably redraw the lines based on the presidential election of 2024, he said Texas went dramatically more red. In fact, Starr County, the most southern county in, or one of the most southern counties in Texas, that is like 98% Hispanic, for the first time in over 100 years went Republican in that race. Maybe we should redraw lines to better represent and reflect the voter base that actually turned out and the way that the state of Texas actually went. That's where this all got started. Now, Democrats predominantly, or both sides have been doing it. Democrats have been better at it because, again, they create the laws of the system. They create the rules of the game here, and that they've been able to utilize and take advantage of the system. Now that we started it, they said, no, watch it. We are the masters of this game because we literally wrote the rules for the game, and we're going to show you how it's done. So California went more radical. Virginia's trying to go more radical, and the Supreme Court is starting to push back. Their ruling yesterday, I'm sure you saw, Supreme Court making a decision in the state of Louisiana that you're not allowed to have a district based on racial gerrymandering. That's not okay. And because of that, the civil rights advocates saying that now there's no representation for black folk in this country because of districts that are not solely only representing the black communities. Hakeem Jeffrey making a statement yesterday evening and said this.
Where affirmative action is gone. Diversity is gone, equity gone, inclusion gone, racial tolerance gone, the Voting Rights Act largely gone. But guess what, extremists? We're still here.
That's right.
And we're not going anywhere.
Now, oh man, there's a lot to break down on there, right? I know, I can hear you fuming and seething through the radio as well. Look, all of those things being gone, those are good things. I got to ask you a question, and I know, Todd, and you guys being based there in Memphis, and you know the minority populations that listen to the program here, I'm specifically asking you and calling to the program today, 901-260-5926. How do you end racism? How do you end the racial segregation and racial differences in society for all of us to be happy-go-lucky, sing kumbaya, hold hands, and all get along? In my opinion, and I'm using the words of Morgan Freeman here in an interview, where you end racism by what? Not talking about race. You don't mention it. You don't bring that up to be the divisive issue. As an innocent, sweet young child of society, they won't know racism and notice the difference of individuals unless you specifically point that out. Hey, they're different because of their skin color. They're different because of their religion. They're different because of, and by putting that seed into their brain, now that's all you think about. You don't think about the Martin Luther King idea of, you know, the based on, you know, judge someone based on their character, not based on their skin color. You don't think about that any longer. You're now thinking, because that seed's been planted, oh yeah, they're different. And it's in your mind subconsciously because you were told they were different. If you don't talk about that, it's not a thing. And you fight it that way. But because of this, Hakeem Jeffries is very angry. DEI's gone. Good. Racial segregation's gone. Good.
Where affirmative action is gone.
Affirmative action's gone. Good. We don't need that.
Diversity is gone.
Diversity. We don't need diversity training. We just want to all get along and do our thing, right?
Equity gone.
I don't even know equity. That's just a dumb one. For those that don't know, equity means value, right? Means worth. If we're pushing not only equality but equity, that's literally saying, hey, government, you get to decide my worth in society. That was the dumbest move they ever tried to make, and I'm glad we're starting to push back on that one, too.
Inclusion gone.
I can't. It's so ridiculous. That has led to, by the way, the big decision yesterday from the Supreme Court on the state of Louisiana, as they're looking at redrawing their lines. Now has Alabama pushing a redistricting, saying that many of their lines have been racially gerrymandered. They're looking at redrawing some of theirs, winning a potential couple new Republican seats in Alabama. They're being challenged in court for potential racial gerrymandering for their congressional lines that Democrats, have drawn over the past few decades. And as of late last night, the state of Florida has officially voted on their redistricting that could potentially gain Republicans 4 seats in the state of Florida. And the childlike mentality was at bay as they voted and they saw the official numbers come in, with one Democrat with a bullhorn in the congressional house angry about that vote officially finalizing.
Representative Persons Mullica has...
Okay, I got to stop for just a moment. So, again, she's walking up and down the aisle of their state house chambers. They're doing the vote. They're finalizing the vote. They're counting the vote. And as the vote's coming in and finalizing everything, she's walking up and down the aisle with a bullhorn. This is a violation of the Constitution. Now, remember, this is the Democrat side that doesn't care about the Constitution, or else 80% of the federal government wouldn't be there, because it's all a violation of the federal government and what the Constitution says federal government is and is not allowed to do. So they only use it when it's convenient for them. But like a child who was told no walking past a candy store and drops down and starts flailing on the side of the street, they throw a temper tantrum with a bullhorn in their legislative chambers saying that you're violating the Constitution by redrawing the lines and redistricting in the state of Florida. Very angry individuals.
Destroy our democracy. This is a violation of the Constitution. It is. It's a violation of the Constitution. I'm out of order, but y'all are doing illegal.
Representative Persons Mullica has waved closed. The question now recurs on final passage of HB1D. The clerk will unlock the machine and the members will proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Have all members voted?
Chaos.
The clerk will lock the machine and announce the vote.
83 yeas, 28 nays, Mr. Speaker.
Show the bill passes. Read the next bill.
None on the desk, Mr. Speaker.
All right. The absolute chaos. I don't know why they didn't escort that individual out of office. If you're acting that way, completely unprofessional, completely being a complete nuisance in that chamber with a bullhorn screaming and yelling, it's like the bickering hens. That's what they do. And when they don't get what they want, they have no problem causing an issue and throwing a complete temper tantrum. It's the end of the world to them if they don't get everything they want. Why was she not removed from the chamber, and why was she not removed from office? To me, that's completely unprofessional. Shouldn't be allowed to do that. Absolute insanity. Your thoughts on this? 901-260-5926. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. Stay here. All right, welcome back to it. Pat Sarns radio program. Andy Hoosier sitting in today for a Thursday. We'll get back to some of this redistricting, some breaking news happening just in the past 15, 20 minutes or so. We'll do that in just a moment. But want to tell you about our friends over at Patriot Mobile here on the Todd Sarns radio program. Every day, Americans make choices that shape our country's future, right down to which cell phone provider that we support. And here's what most people don't realize is that Patriot Mobile is not just a wireless provider. They're an activist organization. Funded by selling top-tier cell phone service, they've been on the front lines defending our freedoms long before it was cool, standing in the gap when others would not. The best part is they deliver the prioritized premium service of all three major U.S. networks, giving you the same or even better coverage backed by 100% U.S.-based customer support. Right now, get unlimited data plans, mobile hotspots, international roaming, and so much more. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you'll help grow a movement that fuels the Christian conservative cause. Every bill you pay helps advance the values of faith, family, and freedom. Switching is easier than ever, and you can activate in minutes. Keep your number, keep your phone, or you can even upgrade. Take a stand today. Here's what you do. Go to patriotmobile.com/Todd or call 972-PATRIOT and use your promo code Todd for a free month of service. That's patriotmobile.com/Todd or call 972-PATRIOT and make the switch today. As we look at redistricting, President Donald Trump sending out a Truth Social not just 20 minutes ago. And it sounds like this Supreme Court case with saying that the racial gerrymandering of Louisiana, and you have to say that with the accent, right, Dylan? You can't just say Louisiana. You have to say Louisiana because that's how they say it, right?
Yeah, I think so. Louisiana.
Louisiana. I'm assuming if you're from Louisiana, you can call and be mad at me. It's okay. I don't. The views expressed by Andy Hoosier do not represent the Todd Sarns radio program. But the Supreme Court case has shaken some from the Democrat side. The panic has set in that Donald Trump may win this one at the end of the day. The redrawing of lines, the winning a few seats across the board. We have Alabama pushing for it now. Florida just voted last night. And now, not 20 minutes ago, President Trump sending out a Truth Social saying, "I had a very good conversation with Governor Bill Lee of Tennessee this morning, wherein he stated that he would work hard to correct the unconstitutional flaw in the congressional maps of the great state of Tennessee. Likewise, all the other political representatives of Tennessee had promised to do so. This should give us one extra seat and help save our country from the radical left Democrats and their country-destroying policies of high tax, open borders, transgender mutilation, defunding the police, ICE, and Border Patrol, no voter ID, soft on crime, and so much more. Thank you, Governor Lee. Push hard, President Donald J. Trump." So, Dylan, you guys in Tennessee, you might actually see some redrawing of lines there and the correction of what he says was an unconstitutional flaw in the congressional maps from Tennessee. I don't know what that looks like. I'm not familiar with the congressional lines in that state, but this is another step in trying to correct that course. As we said in the first segment, the Democrats, both sides have gerrymandered. One side of it is very, very good. Republicans have not been very good at it. Democrats are masters of it because they literally write the laws. For example, the state of Colorado, I'm going to pick on them for just a moment. That's where I originally came from growing up in Colorado. Most of you may recognize the name of Boulder, Colorado, one of the most progressive liberal Democrat areas in the entire nation, really. Boulder County itself, outside of the city of Boulder itself, very Republican, very rural, very red, a lot of farming community. The way they drew the lines in that district was like a pie shape, because Boulder, the city of Boulder, was in the middle of the county, in the middle of the district, and they branched it off to make it a pie shape to where there's a portion of the city in every single district in that area, so that way it would turn the entire county blue, and it would turn that entire district blue because of the pie shapes that they actually turned it into to have a representation and a reflection of that city of Boulder in all those rural communities in that area. That's what they've done, and they're very smart, and they're like, "Well, we're just trying to balance out the population size," but that's kind of crazy to me. That's not a proper representation, and like we mentioned, two vastly different needs between those communities, but that's what gerrymandering looks like, and Democrats have been very good at doing that. We got lots more coming up around the corner for the Todd Sarns radio program. Stay here. All right, welcome back to it. Todd Starnes Radio Program. Andy Hoosier sitting in for Todd Starnes today. If you want to jump on the program, 901-260-5926. It's always great to have you, especially for a pre-Friday celebration. We have some more breaking news, by the way. Dylan, did we not say a lot of things happening on the show today? Not only is Donald Trump pushing for more redistricting, the state of Tennessee now announcing that they will be looking at potentially gaining one more seat for Republicans in there for their unconstitutional drawing of their lines. Breaking news as of right now, NBC News hat tip to that one, that it sounds like Department of Homeland Security may be officially funded and ending the record 75-day partial government shutdown for DHS. That includes FEMA, that includes ICE, that includes Border Patrol and other organizations and programs, as it was done by the House that ended up voting on the Senate bill, and they voted by voice vote on that one. And it sounds like it may be going to President Donald Trump. So we will break some of that and talk about it here in just a little bit. But good news, we could see the end of the shutdown from the Trump administration, from at least from Democrats accusing the Trump administration for holding up DHS funding. Why? Because they wanted ICE to be drained of all their funding and shut down Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Not today! Evil Democrats that wanted to shut down government programs. So, yeah, big news here, and congratulations. We'll see what that looks like. We'll cover that in just a little bit. But want to shift gears. Moving over to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker Hotlines, I want to talk for just a moment about some, I guess, more societal issues. There was a headline. Let's see if I can find it again here. There was a story. Oh, here it is. Hat tip to studyfinds.com on this one. One third of Americans are having a, quote, existential crisis right now. Now, that's, I mean, take that as you will. Is that over-exaggerated? Is it legitimate? I know that mental health issues have been a focal point for a long time. We need to focus on more of that. I'm glad we're focusing on more of that. But the fact that all of us are so high-strung all day, are we getting better? And what about the young generation? Generation Z, and the anxiety they have, the suicidal tendencies, social media, mental health issues, and more. That's where we want to go to with our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker Hotline. Happy to have on the program, as he is the executive administrator for the organization Prayer at the Heart. Happy to have on here Reagan Wilbanks. Reagan, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing so well. Andy, it's a pleasure to be on the show with you today.
Yeah, appreciate you jumping on here, and I'm glad you guys are focusing on this issue. I have a hard time believing that we have so many people that are under such mental anxiety every day. I've read a story before, the average fifth or sixth grader has the same anxiety level of those that were in psychiatric hospitals back in the 1950s, and those are middle schoolers. We have a generation coming up where almost a third of the population are on anti-anxiety meds in some aspect. What the heck's going on here, Reagan? Why are we seeing so many angry and frustrated people?
You know, you've got to look at what shaped the generation. Every generation has these kind of keystone events that have caused this to form and shape how they view the world. And Gen Z is formed by a lot of change and a lot of anxiety-inducing events. Most notably would, of course, be the COVID-19 lockdown, which turned the world on its head. So Gen Z is coming up with their key times for most of them, whether they were in college or high school. And then everything's different all of a sudden, and the world never went back to normal. And then right on the heels of that, you have this AI boom that's really started in the last few years, completely reshaping how education is done, how work is done, interviews, productivity. So it's this rapid change, and what we know is that change and uncertainty create anxiety. So you've seen this skyrocket in anxiety. And fueling that as well is the digital usage, which, of course, skyrocketed with COVID in the isolation causing loneliness. There's a lot of feedback loops happening here, Andy, all contributing to one messy soup.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors for sure. I can only imagine as well, the current events, the news and stories of the day doesn't help with that, because it's all about hysteria. It's all about fear mongering, right? We hear, I mean, the headline we have today is that we're spending 100% of the GDP in the economy and we're losing value of the dollar, which has been going on for a long time. So welcome to the party, pal, if you haven't been paying attention to that one. But of course, they have the picture that Donald Trump's evil and gas prices are going up and inflation's going on the rise and so on and so forth. So, I mean, this has been an ongoing issue, and if you're growing up with that type of constant anxiety and fear mongering, that's not going to help the situation, is it?
Definitely not. When you look at, are you hopeful for the future or are you anxious about the future? I think many of Gen Z, they would say they're very anxious about the future. And like you said, that is a lot of the news that we're reading, a lot of what's happening. I think there's a shift that can happen, and we'll talk more about that and the role of prayer and religion in that. But right now, if they're focused on the world, they're going to be anxious.
Yeah, that is very true. So here's the question, and I don't mean this to come off as crass or uncaring or dismissive in any fashion, because mental health is a serious issue. We have to address it. That being said, is there a line or is there a difference between some that truly honestly need it based on, I don't know, chemical malfunctions in the brain, between malnutrition that does cause a lot of anxiety, depression, suicidal tendencies, and so on and so forth, where there truly are issues or PTSD and traumatic events, and those that maybe have been, what I like to say, maybe over-therified, to where it's difficult to even function with the basics, and they have to talk to their therapist for an hour about how difficult it was to tie their shoes in the day, which I know there are some of those out there as well. And I don't mean to be dismissive for people, because I don't want to dismiss a mental health issue, but are there some that have taken maybe advantage of that situation to be a victim and to feel comfortable in that situation to where they're always in that spot?
It's certainly a possibility. What I would point back to is, again, you've got these things that are forming and shaping a generation. So if they are that way, if me and my generation can be that way, how did we end up this way? A lot of that's going to end up coming from how we were shaped and how we were raised and what's going on in the world that was created for us to come into. So if we want to be a better world, we've got to create a better world.
That's exactly it. I'm glad you mentioned it, because that's where I was trying to direct it here, was the parents and the helicopter parenting, the snowplow parenting, the putting your child in a bubble and never letting them deal with hardship or a heartbreak or anything in life. That doesn't set them up for success, because when that does happen in the competitive world that will eat you out and spit you out alive, like you have to prepare your children for that. And if they're not, you could see them, you know, not be able to handle it.
And Gen Z is responding, and they're going, we know our parents had great intent, and we love them, and also we're going to do things different, and we're okay with that. And you're seeing that in the way that Gen Z's parent, the way that me and my wife end up parenting. So there are changes that are already happening there.
Good. That is really good news. I love that. We're talking with Regan Wilbanks. She's with Prayer at the Heart. As you can find their information, prayeratheheart.org. You hinted at it on some of the solutions on what we can do to fix this issue. It's not only the parenting thing where, you know, we do try to end some of this helicopter parenting or snowplow parenting. Yes, there's a difference. It's a wild conversation to talk about parenting styles. But you mentioned faith and going back. There is a resurgence right now of story after story showing the young generation, Generation Z particularly, are choosing willingly to go back into the pews, to see a resurgence of young individuals going back to church and finding faith in some fashion. I'm not going to talk about denomination or type, but anybody that's finding that faith, whatever it may be, and turning away from what we've seen is government solve the issues. We want government bureaucrats to solve our issues for the day, to, you know what, maybe they don't have all the answers. I don't trust a lot of them. I'm going to turn to a higher power to try and find guidance in my daily life. Are you seeing the same thing?
Absolutely. And we talked about some of the things that have shaped Gen Z, COVID and AI. How are Gen Zers responding to that? Well, with COVID and isolation, what do they turn to? Gen Z is turning to smaller churches. I love that you said we're returning to the pews, because often that is it. They're not going to the big mega churches that have the rows of chairs and the auditorium style. They're going to the small churches with local communities, and even house churches, Andy, interestingly, are on the rise. Where else are they going? Well, with AI and this rapid change and things that are artificial and quickly generated, they're looking for things that are stable, old, and have history, and they know aren't going to change. So these liturgical traditions like the Catholic and the Orthodox Church, even the Anglican Church and others, they are experiencing a big boom of Gen Zers, especially Gen Z men. It's skyrocketing, because that's what Gen Z is looking for. They're looking for beauty and authenticity in a world that's very unstable, very manufactured, very fake and cheap.
Yeah, that is so very true on so many different levels, because I think what people are striving for is something real. right? Something real that's tangible that we can actually get back to. Like you said, the small pews, the small church and the local community, just going back to that. There was a story a while ago about a rise in paganism as well, and people were really confused on why paganism was rising. And I personally honestly think that people were just going back into nature and was like, wow, this place is alive. There's some really cool stuff out here in nature. And, you know, because it's real. It's not fake. It's not something that we hear on the news and the fear-mongering and the phobia, and we don't know what's truthful, what's not truthful, and, you know, from the media and from social media, and like you said, artificial intelligence, you don't know what to trust and what not to trust, but you know that when you sit in the pew that you have that local community connection. When you sit out in nature, that you feel that the trees and the grass and everything and the air is alive around you, and you feel alive in that moment, reconnecting with nature. All of that, I think, is a very good thing, is it not?
Absolutely, and Paul talks about in Romans how we look out in nature, we look at what God's created, that revelation comes from God. We go, oh, there's got to be a creator here. And these things speak to God. So I think even with that turn to nature, I'm hopeful that many of those people, they're going to encounter the Holy Spirit there as well. That's where I go when I want to pray. And of course, the movement I'm connected to is a movement of prayer. Where did Jesus go?
Right, exactly.
He went out to nature too. He didn't go into the synagogue to do his prayer. He went out to a mountain alone. So he got some exercise, he got his body moving, and he got out into the world that his Father created. That's how he did his praying. That's how we probably ought to do ours too.
I completely agree. That's where, honestly, for me, same thing. You sit out in the nature, you hear the river run, you see the trees move, and you connect with God in such a wild way. It's pretty profound and deep, which I like. I mean, that is our church, and I really enjoy that. Let's go to, you mentioned AI a few times here. What do you think the future of AI looks like? We're hearing stories now that AI is now the therapist for certain young individuals. We hear about romantic relationships, which just kind of really makes it strange. I don't even understand how that one kind of works. But what does the future of AI look like, and how do we properly and safely integrate it into society, since it's not going anywhere? But how do we integrate it to where it doesn't take over or we become overly dependent on it and actually make it think for us on a regular basis?
Yeah, cognitive outsourcing is something we've done for years. So cognitive outsourcing can be anything as simple as having a calendar instead of remembering every date. So that's a simple example of cognitive outsourcing. With AI, we've taken it on a massive scale where all of our thinking, as you said, can be cognitively outsourced to this AI, this artificial intelligence. So what's it look like? It looks like being intentional and making a choice about when do I want to use this, and when do I want to struggle with something? That struggle is not a bad thing. For instance, if you were going to start an organization, even if you could get the words right for a mission statement, it would be better to struggle with it because you get a deep understanding. Mm. And religion is an important area there. Even if you can get the answers to what the right Bible verse is, it's better to struggle in prayer with an open Bible in front of you, praying through God's word, saying it back to him, saying, God, help me understand this. That's going to be better for us. So integrating AI is about being intentional about it. It's, like you said, a tool we're all going to use and continue to use. It's going to be helpful in many ways, but we've got to make real decisions instead of just letting it take over everything for us.
Yeah. I love that. I love it. We have just about a minute or so left here, but I want to wrap up with one last question. Are we getting better on treating mental health issues in society? For the longest time, we've relied on big pharma to give us an anti-anxiety pill, antidepressant pill. In fact, 26 to 30 million Americans are on these pills every day, which is absolutely insane to me. We're seeing a bit of a transition when it comes to federal policy with the MAHA movement, RFK Jr., with them now looking at ibogaine and psilocybin and psychedelics to try and rewire the brain and actually cure a lot of these issues and fight it off by facing your demons and then being able to come out better on the other end of it. From that aspect of it to the faith side of it, are we getting better at addressing mental health issues? And do you think that we're moving in the right direction when it comes to treatments for this stuff?
We're moving in the right direction because the right direction is something we've known about for a long time. It's community. It's purpose. It's getting out into nature. It's all these things we've talked about that winds around prayer and purpose. Here's what I would want to say to those struggling with mental health. You can be one in a million. Listen, there's purpose here. So you don't have to live life with this kind of uncertainty or anxiety. You can be one in a million, praying for one in a million to be saved. That's what Prayer at the Heart is about. You can go to prayeratheheart.org to sign up, to join something, to get a little bit of that purpose, to join in a movement to see the nation change, because it's going to start one-on-one, you sharing your faith with another, and gradually, then you start to see a shift. God's not done with this yet. And Andy, I believe that you listeners have a part to play. Go to prayeratheheart.org, sign up to be one in a million, praying for a million to take.
Yeah, go and check it out. I love it. And crazy wild concept about community, all getting together and not the individualized isolation that we've seen during COVID and that we've tried to push with social media and chat groups on there instead of actually getting in person and just sitting in your room online talking to people remotely. That is not the way that's going to cure these mental health issues. Reagan, we appreciate the time very much, my friend. Love the conversation. Let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Andy.
Yeah, you bet. Appreciate it. Again, you can find the information at prayeratheheart.org. Go and check those guys out. Reagan Wilbanks, we appreciate him very much. Got to take a break. We'll get your thoughts on this and so much more. What's going on today for a Thursday on the Todd Starnes radio program. All right, welcome back to it. Todd Starnes radio program. We got just a few minutes as we're wrapping things up for this hour of the program. As we saw, thanks again, by the way, to Reagan Wilbanks, the Prayer at the Heart organization. Great information about the mental health awareness going on in the nation. We've had some breaking news this hour, according to NBC News, that Congress has officially voted to end the record-breaking 75-day partial government shutdown of sprawling different federal agencies, including the Department of Homeland Security with ICE and FEMA and others. That one was done on a voice vote, which I find kind of interesting. They did not do a recorded vote on there, so we cannot see the yays and nays, but apparently it was enough for the chamber to be appeased enough to say that it's good. It was a Senate bill, so they don't have to send it back to the Senate, and now it sounds like it's going to the president where we can sign it and actually end this government shutdown. President Trump been very anxious to make that one happen. You said, Dylan, that you have an audio clip. Speaker Mike Johnson recently just making a statement on this, and this is what he had to say.
Patiently, we do as we must, and we ultimately deliver. Don't doubt the House Republican majority. We always deliver for the American people. We did it again, in spite of the challenges, and we continue to do that.
All right, there you go. So, boom, we got her done. Now, it took a long time. The last week, I know they were working on a House bill and a Senate bill, so they couldn't quite come to terms. And I'm glad that this is finally done. As far as I'm aware, it all includes ICE funding. And according to what we're seeing here, that it is a full funding of the all of the agencies, such as the Emergency Management Agency, Coast Guard, Transportation Security Administration, Secret Service. That was included in there as well. Relatively handily and helpful for, I don't know, incidents like we saw last weekend. All of it being funded through the rest of this fiscal year for the end of September, which means we get to turn around and do it all again in about 6 months from now and see if Democrats try to shut it down for a political purpose going into elections in November. We'll break more of that down later. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. Stay here.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes. Oh,
yeah. What is up, America? Welcome into it. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. No, it is not. Todd, he should be back behind the microphone before you know it. Faster than you can say, Todd Starnes, where are you? He'll be back at it soon. Until then, yours truly, Andy Hoosier, sitting in studio here and moving that Liberty University Studios out to Wichita, Kansas, my flagship station, KQAM, in Wichita, away from Memphis, Tennessee, where he's stationed at, with my flagship station and great affiliate of the Todd Starnes radio program. If you want more of Todd, you can always find him on his website, ToddStarnes.com. ToddStarnes.com. You can find me on my website at HoosierReason.com, HOOSER Reason.com. And follow me. Would love to have you follow us there For sure. All right, bottom of the hour, we're going to have Sal Litvak. He is a Jewish comedian and author. We're going to talk about Jimmy Kimmel and the defense. He's gone double down, man. The doubling down of him trying to make jokes that aren't really funny, trying to advocate for the ending of the Trump administration, the Melania joke that he tried to make just a few days ago prior to the correspondents' dinner. We'll talk about all that and where we're at with political violence, anti-Semitism, and so much more. We've played a few of the clips throughout the show today of Erica Kirk and that battle between Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson and those that unfortunately, at least in my opinion, maybe you disagree, have gone really off the deep end and to the point of even like extreme anti-Semitism, which is really unfortunate. So we can get your thoughts on that. I do have an audio clip, though, and Dylan, you're going to really enjoy this one. Our favorite person, at least one of my favorite people that I like to poke fun at, kind of the low-hanging fruit, really easy to do so, is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Does Todd talk about her quite a bit on this program?
Not as much as he used to, but he still throws in a couple jabs here and there.
Okay, all right. Well, you know, she is one of our favorite people. I do play a clip of her on my show.
I am told this is a garbage disposal.
Yeah, so, I mean, that is her, probably one of her best clips out there. For sure. She was caught on the side of the street outside after one of their congressional sessions or doing whatever she does by TMZ, and she made some interesting claims. Now, I want to preface this by saying this is still potentially one of the presidential nominees for the Democrat side in 2028, or we'll be challenging Chuck Schumer for the Senate seat in the state of New York here relatively soon as well in 2028. So not sure which direction she's going, but she's kind of one of the poster children of the Democrats right now. TMZ caught her on the side of the road, and Dylan, I got to get your thoughts on this one, man.
What do you think we're going to have first? Are we going to have a female president first or a gay president?
Oh, it's a... Well, we don't know if we've already had a gay president.
Hey, that's true.
I think there are chances that maybe we have, but...
Whoa. Whoa. What? Who's she referencing there? I mean, are there rumors of somebody? The only rumor I've kind of sort of heard in the background rumor mills was like George Washington may have been, just because... He was, I guess, if back in my day, if you remember one of those terms when I was in high school in the early 2000s, there was they coined the term metrosexual to where you're not gay, but you dressed like a gay person. You like as a guy, you took really good care of yourself, maybe had a little bit more of the flamboyant accent, which again, I don't care, whatever, do your thing. But that's the only reason why some hinted that maybe George Washington was because he was very prim and proper back in the day. I don't know anybody else. Is there rumors out there of one of the presidents being gay?
The only other one that I've heard would be Abraham Lincoln, and there's like there's like documentaries about this. I don't know if any of it's true, but that's the only other one that I've heard, and it's I don't even remember what they were claiming, but like his guy friends or his guy assistants or whatever it was, but that was the only other one, but. Yeah,
really? I had not heard that one. So, all right. Well, apparently there's some rumors out there, but I mean, that's typical TMZ. That's the kind of stuff that you get the National Enquirer kind of conversation.
Yeah, what a question.
But, yeah, what a question. Why you'd ask that in the first place? Are we going to have a female or a gay? Like, we really care about the identity politics because, again, we just don't care. It's about your ideas and are you a good human being? Outside of that, I don't really care one way or the other. But she made that claim where now we apparently have the rumor that we have already had one in some aspect. She continues on, though.
If you had to guess, what do you think we'll have first? Because a lot of people are like, we tried female candidates a couple times in a row. Yeah. They didn't work out. So, like, Democrats are now a little bit hesitant about doing it again.
I mean, honestly, I think anything can happen. I don't really buy into the skepticism. A man has lost almost every presidential election. As well. And so when it comes to women, you know, I think it's more about what we're actually fighting for, right? As opposed to the body that we're in. And so I think it's about not taking, you know, big money, fixing campaign finance reform and trying to fight for people and, you know, raise wages and help people make a living. And I think that if we have someone who fights for the right things and speaks to the right people, then, you know, maybe we can overcome the gender gap in that. And
wow. Okay, so let me get this straight, Dylan. So we're going to overcome the gender gap by having a female president relatively soon, but it's not about the fact that it's what body that we're in. It's about who we actually appeal to and what kind of campaign we're running, which I agree with, but that's just really weird coming from her, especially from the face of the Democrat Party that focuses on everything identity politics about, are you a person of color in some fashion? Are you a woman? Are you a trans individual? Do you identify as a cat? Like, that's really strange that that's the statement she would make. And then in the same sentence be like, oh, by the way, then we can close the gender gap once we get a woman president. That's just a weird statement from her.
Yeah, like, don't back down now. Like, this has been your whole stick for, like, for years.
Just so, own it. Just yeah, own it. Just That's own what it. You want. You want point. The female president thing. And I think she's trying to play nice because here's my prediction. She's trying to become more mainstream. She has gotten such a bad rep of being the radicalized nut that even the Democrats under Nancy Pelosi tossed her off into random committees and subcommittees that mean absolutely nothing. They kept her away from the cameras because she was giving the Democrats a really bad reputation. Now that she is becoming kind of the poster child of the socialist movement, she was the one that endorsed and put Zohran Mamdani up there for mayor of New York City and kind of ran with him and be the first person to really campaign with him, that she's becoming that poster child and she's trying to become more mainstream. So she's got to play nice, right? Got to play nice to the mainstream media because right now, yes, imagine it, and I cannot wait for this campaign ticket to actually announce Kamala Harris AOC ticket for 2028. That's, according to the polls, that is the most popular potential ticket right now for the Democrats. Dylan, I'm telling you, man, if that's what the Democrats have, bring it on, baby. I can't wait. This is going to be fantastic.
I'm right there with you. I love watching the Kamala word salads. Those probably were my favorite parts of the debates. And just generally, anytime she was on camera, just anything she says was like, what are you actually trying to say? Because it's a circle right now. And
well, not only that, I don't know if you've seen the ones recently in the past couple of days or the past week. She was trying to knock the high gas prices, which is funny because gas prices are still, even with the height that they're at right now, still lower than what they were under her and the Biden administration for the past 4 years. We finally just matched their level of gas prices in 2022 right now, which was a year into the Biden administration, not at the peak of their prices. So we still have a ways to go to there, but she was out there and she was in, I don't know, North or South Carolina. And she honestly, she sounded like she was drunk and she was at no enthusiasm. Like she did not care whatsoever. They posed her in front of the prices of the gas station and she was like, hey, I'm out here and the gas prices are really high. And it was the most absurd video I have ever seen in my life. So she hasn't gotten rid of that. Please, dear God, we know you're up there. Let us see the Kamala Harris AOC ticket for 2028. It will be so much fun to beat them down again, election-wise, and to see that just completely flop. If that's the state of the Democrat Party, bring it, baby. All right. Your thoughts on that? I'm sorry. Low-hanging fruit. Had to make fun of it for a bit. 901-260-5926. 901-260-5926. We're following some of the news right now. Department of Homeland Security is now going to be opened up the record 75-day partial government shutdown that included FEMA, which we needed, by the way. FEMA has been trying to deal with some of the natural disasters. I live in Kansas. We've had fires in Nebraska. We've had tornadoes in Kansas. We've had tornadoes in Oklahoma, tornadoes in northern Texas, tornadoes in Missouri and Iowa, all over the place. The emergency response that we need from the federal government not able to happen because the funding has been depleted for FEMA. They did not have the funds for it. Along with the assassination attempt against President Donald Trump, we needed to fund Secret Service. So all of it now being funded after a verbal vote just a couple hours ago in the House of Representatives on the Senate bill that now goes to the president to refund it. Here's the thing. That funding goes through the fiscal year that ends September 30th. My prediction again, Dylan, we're going to see this argument all over again at the end of September, because when was the last time that we actually passed a federal budget by the time the federal budget was due with the fiscal year starting October 1? That hasn't happened since, I don't know, beginning of Obama's administration. We always pass some type of continuing resolution. We pass some type of omnibus bill. We pass always something that's an extension of what we're doing with additional funding somewhere. And we never actually address the real issue. That comes at a time when the headlines today show that debt has now surpassed 100% of the GDP. Now, they're blaming the Trump administration for that, but this has been a trajectory for a while, right? It really started, we had somewhat of a kind of sort of loosey-goosey balanced budget under the Reagan administration, the Bush administration 1, the Clinton administration, by George Bush 2, by George W., who, by the way, just did an interview recently. I thought that was kind of interesting. He still has like that happy baby face. He's an old guy now, but he has like that happy baby face that just makes you smile, whether you like the guy or not. It just kind of makes you smile. But under him, that's when we really saw the beginning of a lot of bailouts and the auto industry bailout and the bank bailout. And we saw the printing of the money. And then we saw Obama take that style and then take it to a whole new level. And we started seeing the increase of the federal debt from $10 trillion to $15 trillion to $20 trillion. It was big news back then. To then it started doubling at a time. And now we're at $36, $37 trillion. We're on the road by the end of this year, expected to be at $40 trillion of a national debt and 100% of the GDP. Meaning, what does that mean? That means if you take every dollar and every single penny from every man, woman, child, and private business in this nation, the entire worth of the whole country, that would not be able to pay for the entire federal debt. That's kind of insane. At the same time, the inflation for the first quarter, wrapping up, we just saw from the government coming in at 3.5%, slightly higher than what we had anticipated, and economic growth, GDP growth, coming in at 2% for the first quarter of this year, slightly lower than what was anticipated. Mostly, my guess would be probably because of the conflict in Iran, the driving up of energy and oil prices, and that threw off the economy, not because of the tariffs. Although maybe it's because of the Supreme Court telling them that we have to rebate and refund a lot of those tariff revenues that we had seen. So economic uncertainty right now, which is maybe planned, maybe orchestrated by those looking at Donald Trump, who said he was going to bring in the golden age of America. And now we see debt topping that 100% of the GDP, almost hitting $40 trillion, blaming the Trump administration when this has been a decades upon decades long problem and Congress hasn't solved the issue. We need to reform our spending. And honestly, we have to cut probably 50 to 60% of our entire federal budget, which no one has an appetite to do. So I don't see the problem getting better anytime soon. 901-260-5926 if you want to join us here on the Todd Starnes radio program. Got to take a break. Back after this. Here we are. Welcome back to it. Todd Starnes radio program. Andy Hoosier sitting in today for your Thursday. I want to tell you about our friends over at MyPillow here on the Todd Starnes radio program. I know you hear Todd talk about them often because they are wonderful friends to us here on the program with Mike Lindell and MyPillow employees thanking you for your great support over the past year. And they're looking to make 2026 the best year yet. And as a thank you to the listeners right here on the Todd Starnes radio show, MyPillow is exclusively offering free shipping on your entire order at wholesale pricing. That means they're bringing back the mega sale exclusively for the listeners right here on this program. For example, the classic MyPillow is regularly at $49.98, now marked down to only $14.98. Turn any mattress into the best mattress with the Made in the USA MyPillow My Mattress Topper and save up to $100. Get the MyPillow Giza Dream Sheets as low as $29.98 or the six-pack towel set for only $34.98. To get the best specials ever, go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code STARNS or call 800-839-8506. These offers will not last long, so call today, 800-839-8506 today, or go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code STARNS at checkout. Order now, and the entire order ships absolutely free. That is a deal that's just freaking awesome. All right, Dylan, I want to make a note here, put it in the history books, and Todd can respond back later on. This is twice now to where Donald Trump has tweeted something out at the time that we're talking about a particular issue. I think we're on the same wavelength as Donald Trump today. That's kind of awesome, right?
Yeah, I think we are. I will definitely make a note of that, though.
Yep. Okay, make a note of it. Put it in the history books here on the Todd Starnes radio show today that we are on the wavelength of Donald Trump. The same topics we cover are what he's tweeting about at that moment. We were talking about Kamala Harris and AOC in the last segment and the future Democrat leadership and what they may throw in as a ticket for their presidential run. Donald Trump, not 20 minutes ago, sending out a tweet, anybody running for president or vice president should be forced to take a cognitive examination prior to entering the race. By doing so, we wouldn't be surprised that people like Barack Hussein Obama or Sleepy Joe Biden getting elected, all in air quotes there, our country would be a much better place. I took the exam three times during my three terms as president and aced it all three times as an achievement that even not a single exam, according to the doctors, has rarely been done before. President Donald J. Trump. So there you have it. The cognitive exam that should be done for anybody running for a president of the United States. Now, it's just, it's funny because Hakeem Jeffries, and it's on the fly. I don't know if you can find it down that clip in the last week of Hakeem Jeffries that said that Donald Trump was the dumbest person to ever be in the White House, which obviously is not true because anybody that has taken an IQ test, Donald Trump has actually been the highest IQ to ever sit in the White House, at least for those that have taken that IQ test in general. So it's funny. And at the same time, when you have AOC and Kamala Harris are the ones that are potentially the ones that could be the face of the Democrat Party running for president again. Yeah, come on. That's going to be entertaining for sure. I tell you, Donald Trump always keeping it somewhat entertaining. Speaking of elections, by the way, there is a, I want to go to Texas for just a moment. James Tallarico, the Democrat out of Austin, Texas, that is running for the U.S. Senate against whoever the it's a primary may be with the Cornyn and Paxton primary on the Republican side of the aisle. There's a new story that came out from the TexasTribune.org that shows that Tallarico right now is ahead in the polls from either of those Republican candidates. And I got to be honest, I have a hard time believing that. This is the guy that thinks he's like ultra super religious, but like misquotes all of the religious texts that he tries to say, and is he's pretty much Beto O'Rourke, but maybe a little bit better spoken. That's about the level of Tallarico. According to the poll that was done by the Texas Public Opinion Research between April 17th and 20th, he leads Senator John Cornyn by 3 percentage points in a 44-41 race, and the Austin Democrat leads Attorney General Ken Paxton by a margin of 5 points, 46-41. They say the survey concluded with 1,800 likely general election voters with a margin error of 2.5%. So it's not a wide margin, but it's a margin nonetheless. And even having any type of support for this guy like Tallarico that has been one of the most anti-Christian individuals out there in the state of Texas, what's going on down there, man? Have a hard time believing it. I know Todd has a lot of listeners, great stations down in Texas. I want to hear from you. Is that really true? Are you really concerned about this guy toppling Ken Paxton or John Cornyn? I know that's a brutal primary, but Republicans, can we at least get along enough to not have this guy in office? That would be really great. If he could just get along for a general in November, that'd be great. Thanks. Appreciate that. We got lots more coming up. Last half hour of the program for the Todd Sorensen Radio Show. Stay here. What's up? Welcome back into it. Todd Sorensen Radio Program. Andy Hoosier sitting in today. Again, if you want to find more information about Todd, he should be back behind the microphone before you know it. Online at toddsorensen.com, you can find all his information. If you enjoy the program while I'm here, you can find my information at hoosierreason.com, HOOSERreason.com. And as I always say, it is such a great honor to sit in for Todd. Love getting behind the microphone here in the Liberty University studios. There's a lot going on in Congress today outside of the verbal vote that we've seen from the House of Representatives now ending the 75-day government shutdown, partial government shutdown for the Department of Homeland Security. There's also other bills. They had a really late night last night. I was watching some of the video. There was votes on the farm bill that they're working through. There was votes on the FISA Reauthorization Act. There was votes on the reconciliation bills that they're working on now, as they are now looking at another reconciliation bill to try and cram a whole bunch of the Republican agenda into one big bill and pass it, so that way they don't have to worry about the filibuster issues in the Senate. At the same time, by the way, apparently the Senate is going to be doing a kind of sort of vote on the SAVE Act. John Thune has not been the best on this issue, and he's really just like, all right, fine, go ahead and vote on it. But he's not doing a sitting filibuster vote. He's doing an actual floor vote to where all the Democrats don't have to be there, to where they can shut it down, and then him be like, look, I told you we didn't have the vote for it. So not really the best way to approach this issue, and it needs to be done. Can it be thrown into the reconciliation bill? That will be a cause of conversation for another time. We'll get to that in just a little bit, but I want to shift gears. On the more drama-y side, I don't know if you've seen, I'm sure you've been paying attention, the doubling down of Jimmy Kimmel on the statements that he made about Melania Trump, about how you're glowing like someone who's a, you know, your husband just passed, or whatever the heck he said. And after the correspondence dinner from last weekend, there were criticism. In fact, Melania had advocated for him to be fired because he's made so many derogatory remarks for so long that it's getting a little old. And Dylan, I don't know about you, but it's not even funny to just be like, you're glowing like a widow. And like, that's just kind of weird. And I don't even understand how you could put that into a context of a joke for late night for the clapping seals in the stands and be like, oh, that's a fantastic one. Yeah, I don't get it. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But with that type of statement, with the political violence, the division, the lack of caring about humanity in some fashion, and even the radical anti-Semitism we're seeing in society today, where are we at in culture? That's where we go to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker Hotline. Really happy to have on the show, as he is a comedian and author of the book Let My People Laugh, Greatest Jewish Jokes of All Time. He's also director of the action film Guns and Moses. Love having on the program here, Mr. Sal Litvak. Sal, how are you, my friend?
Great to be with you, Andy. Can you believe the times we're living in? Seems like ever since COVID, everything that's happened was unimaginable before that. And every day something new and unimaginable comes.
Yeah, it really is crazy. I remember, and I mean, being 37, being a millennial, I remember the early 2000s. It was scandalous when we heard Ward Churchill, that professor from the University of Boulder, come out and called George Bush Hitler at that time. And he was actually fired from his position. It made national news. You had the Dixie Chicks at that time that were saying that George Bush, again, was a Nazi, was a Hitler. People started burning their records. Then it progressed, like you said, up to COVID, to where if you didn't take the shot, if you didn't go along with whatever they told you, you were the worst person on the face of the earth. And now that's just normal conversation if you're a Republican, if you're a MAGA supporter, or if you're a Jew, apparently. You're the worst person on the face of the earth. I don't know how we got here.
The worst person on the face of the earth, and violence is okay, permissible, even something they'll advocate for. I saw a video on social media today. This influencer, Deborah Lee, was in Washington Square Park. So I assume these were NYU students. And just asking one after another, what do you think about this assassination attempt on the president? Oh, sorry he missed. Absolutely justified. Makes sense. I mean, this is tomorrow's leader. This is the next generation. It really is shocking how easy it is to find students who agree with this stuff. And where are they getting these attitudes? The American educational system has been captured by absolute radical progressives.
It's really wild, because now, and this goes into this dehumanization, we don't see people as a human being any longer. The response from the Democrats after this issue has been two ways. Either, like you said, it didn't go far enough. Gosh darn it, we missed again. We'll have to get someone with better shot or runs faster or something. Or it just didn't happen. It was all staged. It was all fake. And these aren't the droids you're looking for. Like, it's not real at all because Donald Trump's boosting his ratings. Those are the two solutions they're coming up with. Not maybe we should change the tone a little bit here.
Never, never. There's no pause for self-examination. Not thinkable that, you know, that there's something wrong on their side, because Orange Man Bad explains everything. I mean, in all honesty, the only bright side of all of this is that these idiots are not having children, right? I mean, the radical progressives who are educating these kids and trying to capture them are doing it at a frantic pace because they're not reproducing. You know, the traditional decent people of America are having kids. So I would say that the long-term future, not bad, not bad. But short-term, man, are we looking at some bad stuff.
Yeah. Let's go to Jimmy Kimmel for just a moment. This has not been the first time he's made a comment. I don't know how a joke about you glowing like a widow kind of thing, and he now tries to defend it, saying that it was an age issue, not advocating for an assassination. But he has made absurd comments before, and every time he gets attacked, then he goes on TV and just starts crying because he's so emotional and cares about people and how Donald Trump's just the most evil, horrible human being, again, on the face of the earth. Are there going to be any repercussions from Jimmy Kimmel at all? Because he's still on the air after all these comments he's made throughout the years, and I just don't know why.
I mean, I love what you said before, that he's performing for the clapping seals in his audience, right? It used to be that late night hosts were comedians who were genuinely funny, had good material that elicited real laughter. Now it's all about the clapter, and they're just advocating for the stuff that they hear at the cocktail party. And so you ask, is this guy going to lose his job? I mean, he's not making money for the network, right? The ratings are low. They're lower than they ever have been. He should have been fired long ago. And it seems like the master they're serving in Hollywood isn't money, which it's funny. Like we used to say, well, that's not a good master to serve. But at least it meant that you were entertaining the people. You're not going to make money unless you're genuinely entertaining the people. Now it seems like they care more about which cocktail party are they going to be invited to. And that's a higher priority than just saying, okay, who is America? What is America interested in? that is the people that I am serving, and that seems to be a memory.
Sal, do you think this is the end of late-night TV? We have the elongated, very drawn-out farewell and goodbye of Stephen Colbert with The Late Show that was formerly held by David Letterman. On that front, we have Jimmy Kimmel that's been so radicalized that a lot of people don't watch him because, like you said, I mean, he's just not funny. It's not popular at all. In fact, the last late-night talk show that I actually enjoyed was Craig Ferguson. The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson was by far the best one that I have seen since back in the day. With the original talk shows. But the way this is going and the way the networks are changing, and you being a comedian, I mean, the standard by comedians, right, was to go on late-night talk shows, say a few jokes like that, get in front of the crowds, and that really was a big boost for people's careers. That's a completely different industry nowadays now, isn't it? I mean, is late shows dead?
I'm an optimist. I always have been. I would like to think, especially with Paramount getting Warner Brothers, CBS, you know, they're leaving the house of woke. At the end of the day, remember Jack Warner, the original Hollywood people, were saying, you want to send a message, call Western Union. I just feel that, you know, that the pendulum's got to shift. It can't keep going this direction. Because then, as you say, it is the death of late night television. And why would they give up an industry that actually makes money, or at least they once made money? So I know I'd like to believe that the pendulum will swing back. But maybe I'm a crazy optimist in that.
Well, or it's just going to be a different face. Yeah, it's going to be a different face of it. I mean, to be honest, Stephen Colbert was kind of sort of funny on the Colbert Report when he focused specifically on politics. And we knew he had left-leaning policies, but he was really took jabs at both sides of the aisle. He knew his lane. That's what he stuck to. And now the most popular, honestly, the comedy show on TV now is the Greg Gutfeld show on Fox News. So, I mean, it's not even a late-night TV show where they try to do the Hollywood thing. It's more of, if we're going to lean into this, let's embrace it, and it's going to be something like on Fox. That's just like a whole different dynamic here, isn't it?
Yes. Tyrus is funny as hell. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I would like to think so. I'm not a comedian. I just tell jokes. That's an important difference. I collect the classic jokes. And I'll tell you something. And the reason I say that is because I make movies, and I have always been an outsider in Hollywood. The people here, and now I'm talking to you as a Jew watching situation unfold in the Middle East, right? I mean, Israel was attacked in a way that has just been unprecedented, and the response has been unprecedented. Yet all these presidents, yeah, if Iran does this, if Iran does that, we're going to bomb them. They did nothing. They meant nothing. They did nothing. President Trump took action. The Middle East is being realigned right now. And I think that the country is going to move forward. But these Hollywood people, and there's so many prominent Jews in Hollywood who have said zero, nothing. They're cowards. They're absolute cowards in this town. It's obviously not just the Jews. You look at that Oscar ceremony, and they're all trying to express themselves in their politics. Was that not a big yawn, not just from America, but from the whole world? I mean, who cares what these people think? If they're not going to speak out in a way that reflects what's really happening in the world instead of what's happening at their cocktail parties, they're just making themselves more and more irrelevant.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. We're talking with Salvador Litvak. He is a comedian, author of the book Let My People Laugh, Greatest Jewish Jokes of All Time, also director of the film Guns and Moses. By the way, I love that title. That's fantastic. Let's talk about the anti-Semitism right now in society. Are you concerned about it? We saw this wild turn from the progressive Democrats pretty much out there saying free Palestine and going after saying that if you were part Jewish, then apparently you're now a Nazi and fascist, which was really hilarious during that whole issue with the Gaza Strip. Yep. But then it morphed into the Candace Owens, the Tucker Carlsons from the conservative side that really said that Israel is like the most evil place again on the face of the earth and Jews are all bad. Are you concerned about this rise and why it's becoming so normalized?
Of course I'm concerned. We've had an 80-year respite from this kind of hatred and anti-Semitism being publicly permissible, right? For 80 years after the Holocaust, okay, you know, at least you're going to hate the Jews, but you're going to be quiet about it. Now these people are loud and proud, and it's a kind of return to this kind of historical hatred that we've seen for centuries, for millennia. I mean, you know, when you're a Jew, you can see history from a higher vantage point, so to speak. So yes, it's concerning, but we are also an eternal people. And, you know, it's funny because what these people do is they accuse us of playing the victim card, which is nonsense. You know, my mother and my grandmother were survivors of the Holocaust. They were in a concentration camp. They never call themselves victims. They call themselves survivors. The anti-Semites use Jews as their victim card. Mm. They're looking for someone to blame for their problem, their inability to get ahead. You know, and now you got the Tucker, the Candace. I mean, they'll just say anything for money. Clearly, they're getting paid off. Candace, like, if you actually track the things that she says, it's one hysterical lunacy after another, always fact-free, evidence-free, just what she thinks will get her numbers. And in the end, she's imploding. I mean, no one's taking her seriously anymore except a rapidly diminishing audience.
Yeah. Yeah. She is losing faith left and right, which it was kind of funny. Erica Kirk had made a statement, I don't know, a day or two ago on her Turning Point USA on the radio program and had called out Candace for accusing her of killing her husband. And the response from Candace was, well, you're a sociopath. And there are some that unfortunately follow that mindset, which is wild to me. But like you said, most of it, I think now is for entertainment purposes. Sal, we just got a couple minutes left as we wrap things up. But I have to ask you the most important question of the day today, because this is the claim. Is Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu running and pulling Donald Trump's strings from behind the scenes to make him get involved in these conflicts?
Do you think anybody can run Donald Trump and tell him what to do? That is the most maverick, iconoclast, individual person that's ever run America, that's ever run a business. That guy is sui generis. He is one of a kind. Nobody has ever told him what to do. And every time you think that Donald Trump has been counted out, he's alive, he's kicking, he's still standing, and he's throwing punches.
That's it.
No, certainly Bibi can't tell Trump what to do. But what an amazing thing. What a unique leader in our history. And I just hope that when his term ends, you know, we have worthy successors who can keep the economic policies moving forward.
That is the goal. That is the hope. And the golden age of America is upon us. Donald Trump has promised it. And so far, promises made, promises kept on so many different issues. I can't wait to see it all play out over the next few years. If we're able to, for God's sake, keep him safe from all the crazies on the other side. Sal, we are out of time, my friend. We appreciate it very much. Love the conversation. Got to do it again soon.
Very good. Always a pleasure. Take care, Andy.
You bet. Appreciate it very much. That's Sal Litvak, comedian and author of the book, Let My People Laugh. Go check it out on Amazon, other places as well. All right, we got one segment left. Open lines to you at 901-260-5926. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. All right, welcome back into it. It is the Todd Starnes Radio Show. We got just a few minutes left as we wrap things up. 901-260-5926. Congressman Andy Ogles, how do you pronounce his name? I believe it's Ogles, calls on President Trump using Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution to force the Senate and the House to stay in session until they pass the Save America Act and fully fund DHS. To stop the invasion of migrants. That's a hat tip to Benny Johnson on social media. Well, we've passed DHS funding now, so now can we impose that Article 2, Section 3 to keep them in session to pass the Save America Act that apparently the Senate is going to attempt to vote on, according to Senator John Thune, but it's not going to be a filibuster vote on, like a standing filibuster that you have to actually be there present in order to vote, or else your vote doesn't count, and we don't count you as part of the majority or the what it takes to get a majority. In fact, so we're not doing that. They just want a simple vote just for John Thune to be like, well, we tried, but we didn't get it, which is really unfortunate. Dylan, I can't wrap up on the Todd Starnes radio show without talking about this issue, because the last time I was on the show, actually, I was on with Todd when the news broke about the story from Matt Gaetz about the breeding program with extraterrestrials in humans. So being apparently, I guess, one of the UFO commentators on the Todd Starnes radio show, we got to talk about the issue, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, it's unavoidable at this point.
It's unavoidable at this point. And I have to say, first off, thank you for that, because now apparently Todd knows of my in-depth supposed understanding of UFOs, ETs, and aliens.
Yeah, you were the first guy I thought of when that story broke, so I just had to bring you up into it.
That is hilarious. Well, I don't know if you've seen, but was it yesterday? I believe it was yesterday. He was in the Oval Office. They asked him about the disclosure, because we have registered the domains from government of alien.gov and aliens.gov as the Department of War is still working on disclosure of certain videos. And in fact, Congresswoman Anna Paulina Luna, who has been an absolute rock star on so many different issues, is calling for the release of 14 different videos from government and through the Department of War right now to be released to the public. High definition, not like the grainy stuff that we always see, high definition video, 14 of them, that she says some FCC non-approved words that I can't say here that will mess you up when you see them. That is what she's advocating for. They have not been approved through the Department of War to be released as of yet, but there is the teasing of this disclosure, and Donald Trump mentioned that yesterday.
UFO files and what might be, when we're going to be seeing those.
Well, I think we're going to be releasing as much as we can in the near future for some reason, and I guess it's just a reason that's been in the minds of people for a long time, and that is such, they want to find out about the UFOs. And anything having to do with UFO or related material, and we're going to be releasing a lot of things from...
Yeah, do it, baby. Get her done. We want to see it. Don't hold back, Trump, and if anybody's going to do it, it's going to be him. Todd, it's always an honor to fill in for you, my friend. Andy Hoosier sitting in for Todd Stearns. He'll be back at it before you know it. Until then, it is the Todd Stearns radio program. We will see you back on the radio soon. Bye.